Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Sports Drink Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know it's been a while, but we are back for another edition of The Bird Calls. I'm David Grubb, your host, and I'm joined by two of our usual cast of characters in David Fisher and our editor-in-chief at thebirdrights.com, Mr. Ali Cosell. We're also joined today by the teacher on the come-up, Mr. Charlie Gonzalez.
I'll take it.
Yeah, big gentlemen, congratulations to Charlie. And yes. Maybe if Charlie, you want to mention it real quick, you can for the, you know, listeners, but if not, I understand.
I am simply a humble educator that has been presented another opportunity, and I'm excited to continue on that journey and spread more Pelicans propaganda in the process.
There you go.
I didn't even think of that.
You're right. You're going to a different school district. You're right. You can infect another 150 new kids.
Oh, I've got all sorts of Pels stuff that's going right up on the walls right over there. And I'm sure that the students I'm leaving, they're almost certainly going to be rooting against the Pelicans very hard in the near future. So there's going to be this massive swing from one side of the city to the other of hatred and love for the Pelicans. So that's going to be interesting.
If you think of any humorous, like, Pelicans classroom materials you want to put up, I can lay them out for you. We can knock that out, man.
Yeah, that's so a good idea.
You know, you could have stuff like that you want to, like, you know, demonstrate things. You want to demonstrate effort. You know, you put one Pelicans player, you want to demonstrate inconsistency in class, you put up Jackson Hayes' picture.
Jackson Hayes going right up, yep.
You know, one of those motivational posters.
I'm going to start labeling. You get the Jackson Hayes for today.
Yeah.
Just give him an award. I need
the underachiever. Head. Like, yeah. Hey, kid, man, you didn't bring the effort today. You know, we saw flashes. You gave me five questions out of the gate right, and then 20 wrong. Like, what happened? I know people get mad when we do this, that we kind of pick on him. But it was interesting today because I don't know if you guys saw it in the group chat, and I don't think, Fish, you did. But it came up that Taj Gibson is coming back for another year in the NBA. And Taj is 37 years old, one of the oldest players in the league.
God almighty.
And I was looking at his per 36 and his per 100s for last year. They're better than Jackson Hayes in every area except for scoring.
Not surprising.
It's insane. Like, he played 20 games fewer than Jackson and had almost as many blocks and steals. And almost as many rebounds, only 100 fewer rebounds.
Yeah, but see, how many highlights did he have? How many times did he post on Instagram?
Yeah. You wouldn't even know Taj Gibson. Like, I don't know if you would
Taj Gibson doesn't have Instagram. I refuse to believe that.
I don't even know if you would recognize Taj Gibson's voice if you heard it.
If I played Grubb, you know what, right? I just noticed Taj Gibson shot 39.5% from three last year.
Uh-huh.
So add that to the pot, right?
I don't know.
How many attempts? Let me see. 15 to 38, Taj Gibson last year from three. Had no idea.
Yeah, he only played 40 games. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he's the ass to shoot a lot. But, I mean, to go 15 for 38, whatever. And like I said,
he almost averages three a game attempt. Yeah, made almost half of them.
And look That's at his cool. blocks. Look at his, I mean, steals. He's still an active rebounder at age 37. And he played fewer minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, his rebound rate is higher. It's these are the things that frustrate
you. Yeah, and he jumps like 6 inches off the ground now. Yeah.
But he boxes out. And he sets screens.
And he's in the right spot defensively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so it's those kinds of things that I think that as we get into this conversation about Summer League in just a second, those are the things that we're talking about, because that's what you're really looking for out of these players. But first, the biggest news, of course, over the past couple of weeks has been Zion Williams signing his extension. The first Pelicans rookie to give the full extension in the history of the franchise, really. Yeah, in the history of the franchise, going all the way back since it got here from Charlotte. No rookie had gotten a max extension deal with the team. Their second deal was not a full-term deal. And then for Zion to do it in a place like the Dryads YMCA, which means something to a lot of people in New Orleans, particularly the African-American community, there has been this embracing, it feels like, Zion not going out of his way. It didn't feel unnatural, but there has been, since he's been healthy and his mood has been up, it feels like there's been this greater effort on his part to embrace New Orleans. And going back to similar things that he did as a rookie before that started to fall apart his rookie year. But Fish, let's start with the finances of this. Let's talk about where it puts the Pelicans now, what it means for their immediate future salary cap wise, what it means potentially in trying to add some of these rookies, making sure they get all their rookies on under contract. They've gotten their first round pick obviously signed in Dyson Daniels. But go ahead and give the salary and business side ramifications of Zion's new deal.
I mean, Zion's new deal, I've always been pricing him in at essentially 25% of the cap going forward. Has no effect this season, obviously. Beginning next season, the Pelicans are potentially into the luxury tax, regardless of if, you know, he hits the escalators. What the escalators mean, for those of that are unfamiliar, Zion's contract would go from being 25% of the cap beginning next year to 30% of the cap. Mm-hmm. If he either makes an all NBA team, or he wins Defensive Player of the Year, or he wins MVP. Now we haven't got the full information on that in terms of we've seen other people's contracts where if you make the third team, it only goes up to 27.5. All of that's negotiable. And it, you know, if you make the first team all NBA, it goes all the way up to 30. That's one way they could have done it, or they could do it just he makes third team all NBA, he gets the 30%. So there's ways that can be done. There's also injury protections. The exact details of that have not been completely spelled out.
I don't think we'll ever get those.
But from what you know, the people in the know have said, it's Embiid-esque, and the Embiid protections essentially were if he has injuries, etc., it decreases the amount guaranteed on future seasons. And it really doesn't. It doesn't decrease the amount of the salary if the Pelicans don't agree to waive him. So it's just a nuclear option that probably almost never gets used. But the Pelicans are protected in case he has some kind of like career-ending injury. Is essentially how it's written, or you know how the Embiid protection's written. So right now the Pelicans have 15 players under contract because Dyson Daniels has signed his rookie contract. He did that before the Pelicans took the court last night. The Pelicans have not reported to have signed EJ Liddell yet to his contract. My expectation going into the draft was that the Pelicans would probably sell the second round picks. That did not happen because EJ Liddell fell down to 41. My expectation at this point is that EJ Liddell is going to get a real NBA contract. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, honestly, that he played a summer league game without having that already signed. Typically, most of the second round guys that are higher second round guys have it signed before they take the court, just in case, you know, injuries happen, as we saw with Dyson Daniels, and we'll talk about that more later. But the Pelicans, since they have 15 players under contract, they have to open a spot one way or another if they want to sign EJ Liddell to an actual NBA contract and not a two-way contract. They have time because they don't have to cut down to 15 full contracts until about a week before the regular season tips off. So they could sign him to one now with just the expectation that between now and October, we're going to actually open up the spot. The easiest way to do that, to get very uncomplicated, is they can just waive or buy out Garrett Temple. He can move to his position as an assistant coach, which essentially is what he's been for the past 5 months anyways. If the Pelicans can get him to agree to a buyout, that reduces the amount of his salary cap hit. They could do something where he agrees to a buyout of, I don't know, however many dollars, but that amount also happens to be his new assistant coaching salary. So all that would do is it would just open up more space underneath the luxury tax. If they don't do any kind of buyout at all and they sign E.J. Liddell to a standard second round pick kind of lottery, I mean, not lottery, a second round pick contract, in that case, they're probably going to be about $2 million under the luxury tax going into this season, which is my expectation. It's the cleanest, easiest way to do it. Other ways, trades and stuff like that, but I'm not really worried about opining on the other ways that they can do that outside of saying they could do a trade where they trade out more players than they receive in, and thus they open a roster spot.
Ali and Charlie, as far as that roster spot goes, it feels like, you know, the way that they talked about E.J. Liddell at the introductory press conference, you know, the value that they saw in him, the fact that they talked about if he had come out last year, he would have been likely their target in the draft, along with Herb Jones. And it's very interesting to see that relationship, and certainly the way that they took care of Herb. And we were kind of surprised at how the Pelicans jumped out and gave Herb a real NBA deal as a second rounder right out the gate. Do you think that they make that move to get Temple out of the way? Or, and like I said, I don't think we need to go deep into the speculation, but is Temple the most likely guy? And would you think that Liddell, if he doesn't get this deal done before the end of summer league, that maybe he's played his last game already?
I'll let you go first, Charlie.
I'm very curious. Like you said, Grubb, you mentioned all those points about how the fact that they seem extremely keen on him. They have talked him up a significant amount. And we have seen them handsomely reward a second-round pick just last year with regards to Herb. And I think that Liddell fits the profile of exactly what you want. He's the kind of guy that seems like he would come in here and be a long-term fit. So maybe it is Temple. I think that it seemed to me that they were trending towards figuring out a way to move Devontae. For a few weeks, there were so many rumors. It was mentioned, in articles here and there, as far as Devontae maybe being going on the way somewhere hither or yon. But obviously, with his current situation, that's kind of up in the air. So maybe now it is kind of where they look to really push on Temple, because I just don't think they're going to pull the trigger on any sort of Jax situation. Even though he seems like the next candidate, I don't think they're willing to just cut him or waive him or anything like that. And I just don't know if he has much value around the league beyond an expiring contract. Just because he's just so inconsistent, like we joked about at the beginning. He's fine. And so Temple kind of is the odd man out here, and maybe he ends up getting that, because I do think Liddell could actually be a legitimate basketball player that could help this team. And that seems, you know, like the most important thing to find, versus having Garrett Temple, you know, occasionally come in once in a blue moon. And good Lord, it's always an adventure when Temple's in the court. So,
Ali.
Yeah, I find the whole situation interesting, because Jackson Hayes and Devontae Graham, they're in Las Vegas. Well, actually, so is Garrett Temple, right, cheering on the team. So I feel they're still very much a part of the team. So I'm beginning to wonder. We haven't heard much about, honestly, a two-way contract, which they have one still available. Could it be possible that E.J. Liddell gets that second one, right? Darren Sebron's got one, but they've never penciled in somebody for the second one yet. So I don't know. It's just interesting because you're right, Fish. They made a point of signing Dyson Daniels right before Summer League started, but they didn't do anything with Liddell. So it makes me wonder, is he slotted for that two-way contract? Because it doesn't seem like one of those three guys that we've been talking about for 2 months now, and getting him off this roster somehow, that's going to be happening, especially anytime soon. So I don't know what to make of it. I'll be honest with you.
I'm surprised, because I thought that the Liddell deal would be done, because he's already a kid who, you know, you tell him you love him. And again, this is business, but you tell him you love him. He slid all the way to the second round. And it's kind of it's almost the exact same thing as Herb, because Herb was a guy that the Pelicans valued as a first round selection with him. And they made sure that deal got done. Now, the roster situation clearly is different because of the guarantees and that you have 15 guys already on the roster. But it seems to me it was clear, the decision was made for everybody at like the last 5 months, that Garrett was not part of the rotation. And as you look at it going forward, everything that you would have said on the court that of whatever value he brings, there's someone else who does that. It's not like his contract is this huge albatross. If you're this close to the tax, if you're this close to all these things, and the NBA is going to get more money, because as we've seen, their basketball revenue almost doubled from where it was 2 years ago. I think that they're going to be okay here. It's just surprising to me, because when you see what happened, and we'll just talk about this part quickly with Dyson Daniels, when you see him he sprained his ankle and x-rays are negative, and that's cool and that's important. But if Liddell is a guy that you believe in, especially as a defender, which is the thing that this team can never have enough of, it seems you'd want to give him some security at this point.
Well, and does not the Herb situation – now, granted, let's not say that we expect E.J. Liddell to become Herb Jones right out the gate or something like that.
Right.
But I feel like just the success of Herb last year really should give them some credibility as far as, like, hey, we want to give this guy a contract. We need to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, eat Temple here and there. Like, I feel like that has some credibility, in this, especially – and Jose. Like, I mean, that matters too. Obviously, he wasn't a pick. But having the two of them and the success from last year really does give them some, you know, cachet with regards to if they want to go to ownership and say, this is what we need done. Can we get this done right away so we can get this guy in a real contract similar to what Herb got?
Fish, let me get your thought on this. What about Naji? Now, because Naji's number is not super high, he's another guy that maybe in the rotation could get lost. And as we get deeper into his play, but do you think he's potentially a candidate to get released? Because like you said, I mean, well, this is his now third year in Summer League. And is he potentially a guy that gets released and the Pelicans say, hey, if something goes down, we'll give you our first call. But Liddell is a guy that they'd rather invest in now. Fish? Ollie, you want to get that? You want to get that shot?
That's a good answer.
What's that?
I said, I think that's a good answer. Fish. It really does. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with Naji, I know we all wanted to see some improvement, especially, of course, just looking in last night's game. Naji still looked like the same guy. So he's an easy guy to point a finger at, maybe, especially if you're on social media. So you kind of notice who the fans were irate with. Naji was one of them, but I don't think so, David, to answer your question. I know he's got, what, I think 2 years left. Just this season upcoming is guaranteed at about $1.8 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't think that's, you know, even in the realm of thought, because without a doubt, I think you move off of Garrett Temple first, if not find that trade for, like we've been trying to do with Jackson Hayes or Devontae. But as far as just, you know, pushing Naji out to sign Liddell for that same price, no, I don't think that's an option they're considering at all.
I wasn't proposing it. Go ahead, Charlie.
I was just like, you know, we've seen a lot of, I mean, there's just gobs of speculation in part because of Durant and everything going on around the league. But like, is there even like someone out there that seems like a realistic, like, two for one? I know that I saw something yesterday about like the Jazz with Bogdanovich and stuff like that. But like, I feel like there's got to be somebody out there, because there's so many teams that are trying to tank. Like, there just are. And there's got to be somebody that could, that would be okay doing a Devontae and Jax for, you know, X player that's like just, you know, a solid rotation, whatever.
That you, I just think get. it won't happen before. I don't think anything really happens before somebody gets hurt in preseason.
That's fair.
I don't believe any, like, you know, teams just did their draft. They haven't gotten to look at anybody yet. They don't know what their teams have. They haven't got practice yet. And I think that's once teams, coaches start saying, well, we need this, or owners look at their team, you know, general managers and executives look at the team and say, oh, we're going to suck. You know, it's like, then I think those decisions start getting made. The same with Durant. I think all those kinds of deals, I don't see any major deals happening now. This is not that summer. You know what I mean? Like, there's not this, I think everybody now, when you look around the league, even with Golden State winning the championship last year, now it feels like in the West, there might be six or seven teams who say, we think we can win the West. In the East, there might be five teams that legitimately think we can win the East. So nobody, I don't think, is going to be in this dive to make a big deal to grab back of the rotation players right now. That's my thought.
Can you guys hear me now? Is it working?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Did you get the question?
Yeah, well, no, I'm jumping back to the one that I was trying to answer on Najee. If the Pelicans waive Najee, any team essentially could claim him, and any team, you know, that could use his kind of depth and his restricted rights going into next summer, or the option to, you know, pick up the team option and have him again for another really cheap year. I think he would be like, if you waive him, what's going to happen? Like, the Lakers, I mean, he's essentially like a minimum contract. Like, I think even the Lakers could try to claim him. Like, it wouldn't make any sense. And I mean, Najee played like minutes that mattered down the stretch for the Pelicans. Yeah. Like, just because he has one bad summer league game, like, summer league vaguely appears to be basketball, but it's not NBA basketball.
No, and let's get into the game then. You know, Pelicans lose the summer league opener 85-68 to Portland. You look at just the raw numbers, and it was just it's like you said, it's something resembling basketball. You know, the Pelicans did not shoot the ball well, except from at the free throw line. I mean, they shot 28% from the floor. It 12.9% from three, 10 assists as a team, and six of those belonged to Najee Marshall. No one else on the team had more than one assist except for Dyson Daniels, who had two but only got to play 8 minutes. So, yeah, that was not, to me, you know – the thing we were looking for last year, and I'll let you guys riff off of this. The thing we were looking for last year with Summer League, this is the difference, and I mentioned this to you last night in chat. Willie Green was on the bench last year. Willie Green was trying to
set. The whole coaching staff, I think, was on the bench last year.
But the main thing was Willie was there. Mm-hmm. Because he was setting his tone for the guys. He was figuring what it was going to be out for himself as a head coach. What's my personality going to be? How am I going to connect to these guys? And the one thing that we heard throughout that summer league last year was it wasn't about the fact that the Pelicans won their games by a bigger margin than anybody else. It wasn't the fact they went 5-0. It was the way in which they played. And that was driven primarily by four guys, the four guys that ended up showing you that, you know, over the course of the year, it ended up being Herb, Jose, Trey, and Najee. This year, Herb is not there. Jose is not there. There isn't really a point guard on the summer league roster outside of Dyson Daniels. And again, we only got to see him in his first fledgling minutes of his NBA career before he sprained his ankle. He's not going to play again. This is
the
not
Pelicans
the same.
The Pelicans looked very competent when Dyson Daniels was out there getting stuff where it needed to be.
Yes. And they just, after that, the ball doesn't move. And Najee, to get his assist, it's like he did last year. He was the leading assist guy on the team last year in most games because when he got in transition, he made good decisions. But he's not going to do that in half court. That's not his skill set. So they didn't have anybody to break the ball down. They didn't have guys to make the decisions. You have Jared Harper, who was just chucking. Your guards are all just chucking. And I think overall, it's not the same team. So I think people's judgments last night talking about, well, you got to, you know, being overreactive. No, what are you looking for? The players that you're looking for. And Fish, you always say this. Most of these guys are either competing to be 12th men or G League players or European players. 99% of these guys you're never going to hear from again until the next summer league. I just think it wasn't as bad as people want to make it. Fish, I'll let you go first.
Well, I mean, just jumping off of number one, when Dyson was out there, the Pelicans looked very good because they had somebody that could kind of organize things. And the reason that the Pelicans were so good last year, I mean, yes, Willie was on the bench, but I don't think the Pelicans were better in summer league last year than this year because of the downgrade from Willie to Jaren Collins at all.
I
know what you're saying, but the biggest issue is the fact that, I mean, the Pelicans were starting Kyra Lewis and then had Jose Alvarado coming off the bench last year.
Mm-hmm.
They had guys who, as we saw in the regular season and then, you know, into the playoffs for Jose Alvarado, like guys that can give you NBA competence at the point guard position right now. And they had two of those guys. And that's why those are the teams that, you know, look good to a general extent in summer league, is if you just have, you know, the guy who's actually supposed to create shots for himself and for others out there doing that thing, everything else kind of falls into place. And as soon as they said, you know, Jose Alvarado at least wasn't going to play Saturday, and then Dyson, you know, rolls his ankle, and then you don't have, like, Jared Harper wasn't out there to play point guard at all. Jared Harper's just a tiny shooting guard that's out there to, you know, do his best Mona Ellis impersonation, and he's going to get these shots up. And so I don't take too much away from that. But, man, those first, like, 15 minutes or so when, you know, of game time and the first 8 minutes we got to see a Dyson Daniels, I was very impressed and very excited about what it means for the future.
Holly?
Yeah, to jump off what Fish said, I counted that Dyson Daniels should have had at least 5 assists in those 8 minutes he played. Pels missed a whole bunch of easy shots, guys. So think about it, after Daniels misses the very first shot of the game, right, takes a long three, which was a good shot, I think, because he was in rhythm. We talked about in our group chat. He just missed it. But then after that, you know, Trey missed an open look. Najee was wide open, missed one. And there was a couple other passes from Dyson that just weren't converted, whether because a guy got fouled, like, for instance, Carlo Matkovic. He played hard, but I'll tell you what, the guy's not ready for the NBA. He had a couple, I think, illegal Ds called, defensive rulings against him. He wasn't in making the proper rotation. So either way, he was kind of a net negative on the court. But Dyson, to go to Fish's point about directing traffic, he absolutely did do that. If you guys look, and I went and double-checked today, right at in 4 minutes in, the ball comes up the court. It's not transition, so the Pels are in the half-court offense. And Dyson's directing for E.J. Liddell, who's playing the five. He was set up at the top of the free throw line to go into the corner and switch with the backup center. I forget what his name is, Tyreek or something like that. Number 36.
I saw that play, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you caught that. So he called that switch, and then he immediately made a move because the defense was really trying to trap him up top of key, went left, and then hit John Petty. Real quick pass, first three of the game for the Pels. He had a lot of cerebral plays like that. So to go to Fish's point, I loved everything I saw. And I think that was going to be the plan for this whole summer league. Mm-hmm. I think the reason there's no point guards outside of Jose Alvarado, legitimate point guards, is because they wanted Dyson to play that role throughout these five games. And now it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I'm not sure what team we're going to see, other than it's probably going to be discombobulated a lot. No way you're going to be playing Jose Alvarado a lot, right? There's no reason to push him in the emergency duty. So I'm not going to take too much going forward, but it's a shame. But I think Dyson Daniels, we saw the defense, right? You guys saw how his feet, you can't get past the guy. If you do happen to beat him, guess what? He's going to catch you in about a second and a half, because he's going to find the spot he's got to run to cut you off to make sure he's back in front of you. Or, you know, just being that point of attack defender. I thought he was incredible. Right, Portland couldn't get anything going offensively for the first 5 or so minutes of the game because Dyson was picking you up as soon as you brought the ball up the court, and then they were trying to do some dribble handoffs. Guess what? He was switching on to every single person, and they couldn't get anywhere. So I'm excited as hell about Dyson Daniels, and never mind that he missed all the shots.
I don't care about that.
He grabbed an offensive rebound, couldn't get the putback. Doesn't matter. He's going to learn how to convert at the rim, because there was one play in particular where I think it was that aha moment for him. You guys remember he had a drive down the lane. I think it was a cut. Caught it, did a behind-the-back dribble, got to the basically to the rim and tried to just lay it up easily with the left hand. Got rejected. I don't think he's going to be doing that anymore. So I was excited about him, without a doubt. And I know we'll talk about other guys. Or Charlie, I'll let you talk about Dyson now.
Yeah, Charlie, I'm a
we missed.
Yeah, Charlie, because like the thing, you know, I think we've seen top three picks. We saw Jabari Smith upset with himself, you know, because he missed a crap load of shots yesterday. We've seen Chet Holmgren at times miss some shots. We've seen Jaden Ivey miss some shots at times. So Dyson is not expected to be the scorer. The thing for, you know, that we've always talked that we talked about before the draft is whoever the Pelicans drafted was, that was the lowest thing on the priority list. But to me, to have a 6'8 defender, again, who's that point of the attack defender, now you have legitimate
super value,
you know, with Herb, Trey, Jose, and now Dyson, you have four legitimate at the point of attack defenders that you can count on. Charlie?
It's remarkable. Like, I mean, I know we joke about this all the time, but just we think back to the days of yore when, you know, we're having Etuan Morgard and Kevin Durant in the playoffs. And it's just
the fact that Drew Holiday had to cover the entire Warriors team. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just they're all taller than 6'4", except for Jose. I'm sorry. Jose plays bigger than that. And it's just like the switchability is all there. Like all of the modern, you know, buzzwords that you want to attach to it are all there, but they all give effort. They all are constantly moving. Just like what Ollie said with regards to Dyson was directing traffic on defense, you know, in his first summer league game without any sort. Like, he's just comfortable. Like, the guy's got great instincts. Everything that we saw on tape from the Ignite and from anything that he had done in Australia translated right away. He seemed very comfortable and at ease putting stuff together. And you're right, Ollie, he did seem a little too comfortable in attacking the basket one time he gets rejected. But those are going to come. Like, those are just learning, you know, growing pains. That's going to be fine. That dude can play defense. Like, he is – I messaged you all today and was talking about, like, I was watching just him again, and I just got this vibe of, like, that prime and early Klay Thompson with the way he's big and able to switch, like, 1 through 3 onto multiple positions and hang with – all sorts of different kind of players defensively. Now, he's faster, I think, than Klay, but he's not as big, like, just physically, I think, yet either. And he's totally different player. He's longer than Klay, yeah. And offensively, obviously, he's entirely different. But as a defender, like, it's just like, man, thinking about him as a complementary defender to what you already have with Herb. And if that is your future backcourt flanked by B.I. and Zion, it's just like it's remarkable.
Yeah, Fred don't Vincent forget, you can play Jose out there with
yeah,
those guys.
Exactly. Right?
Just think about that as a pressure lineup of those guys. Oh, my God. Like, Jose – I mean, Charlie, just riff on this, Charlie. Jose at point, Dyson at two. Like, if you put this guy as a second unit and you just want to run, Jose at point, Dyson at two – Herb at 3, Trey at 4, Zion at 5, and just say go run.
And just run. Just, I mean,
press and run.
Or do Brandon Ingram and Nance. I mean, there's so many combinations.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, with those young guys that we're just talking about, you know, yeah. I mean, there's so many combinations.
Give Willie a choice board or like some sort of like magic 8-ball. And just for his substitutions one game, like against, like, I don't know, the Spurs, who are, you know, tanking so hard they might as well be getting fined every game, just let him just pick, just roll it out, say whatever the hell we want to do. We want to go supersized point Zion lineup, play Trey at the 2. Like, all of it makes sense and none of it makes sense at this point. It's just ridiculous. The embarrassment of competency, I think, is like the embarrassment of riches of competency. That's where I feel like I'm just excited about. Because, like, we just haven't had that. Like, I know we've been talking about it as far as, like, within our group, and it's been a topic on, like, you know, Pell's Twitter and stuff about, like, just, like, the depth of this team. And, you know, just adding Dyson, like, it's only one player, but it just, it unlocks so much more to be able to add a guy that can guard 1 through 3 defensively consistently. Because, I mean, like, what was that last year? Like, that was Najee. It was basically, like, because it was – or Garrett Temple.
Well, think about the start of the year. Willie Green was going to Garrett Temple, right?
Yeah.
Because that's who he trusted the most. Now that's not going to have to happen.
No.
Ever. Ever.
Fingers crossed. Ever. Knock on wood. Yeah, that's true. We got to be careful, man. We're going to
– Well, I mean, it's basketball. It's town, sports. But... people get hurt. I mean, they're going to be games missed. We know this. But, yeah. Like, Garrett Temple's in position. Like, if he's on the roster, he's certainly behind a thick, thick piece of glass with a hammer that is very far away from that glass. You know,
I'm trying to hold the laugh in. Yeah,
it's got to be a dire emergency for you to break that glass. I mean, Thor's gonna have to pick up that hammer to break that glass. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like you, I think, and this is something last night that I think I hope you got. Everybody did all you listen to Trajan's interview during the game.
Yeah,
and I thought that Trajan said number one, everything he said about Dyson. Was like, I was, you know, again, a reaffirming their love for that guy. Like everything that he said, you know, the way he watched the play, he didn't mention his shooting once. All he talked about was his intelligence, his movement, all those things. But I thought the better thing was when he talked about the team as a whole. And Trajan said, for the first time since we got here, we now feel we can compete with every team in the NBA every night. Every night. That's the thing. It's been, we know the Pelicans going back to Alvin Gentry. We always saw the Pelicans, and Ollie, you know, your favorite thing was to say, look at their record against the top 8 teams in the league. Mm-hmm. How many times did they beat teams at the top of the league? Well, we knew they could do that, but it wasn't a mentality of competing every night. And I think that's the part that's the big step for the Pelicans this year is that you have enough guys now on the roster that you feel you are going to compete, not have the talent to play against, but that are going to compete against everybody every night. And I think that, to me, is a very good position for the Pelicans to be in, and it's a reason for optimism. But I think it also shows the commitment to this is not an overnight thing. You know, Trajan is still very serious about that. He, Willie, David Griffin, whomever, they've had these discussions that this is not a fully formed team yet. We're not going to run away with the expectations. Our expectations is we want to see 82 games of competition.
Ollie? Yeah, exactly. I mean, McManaman was trying to trick him into saying, well, I think we're a top 4 team or top 6 team. I love, the way he answered that question. And it's everything that we already kind of assumed with this team based on how they finished last year to the roster that's carrying over, right, to the improvement that we saw. And I think that's probably the next thing that we should talk about here, right? I think we've all covered Dyson Daniels. So let's talk about Trey Murphy, who honestly I thought started off as trying to do way too much. We all saw that, right? He's trying to dribble, wasn't really happening, got a couple travel calls. You know, I remember the one where he was in the mid-post, right? Caught it, tried to go over the left shoulder, spin baseline, and just completely walked with it. He was just, for some reason or other, I don't know what it was, was he trying to show that he has indeed deepened his skill set, especially the ball handling part, or was he just nerves or trying to act the leader, right? Because he is now considered one of the leaders, at least on the summer league team. But either way, it wasn't happening in that first quarter, but defensively, and I'm glad Fish was talking about social media. I love what he's doing defensively, right? The active hands, being in the right positions, making really hard rotations. And that led to a few automatic steals for him. Mm-hmm. And so you saw the effort level, and that's what we're talking about, right? That's what you're talking about, Grubb. I think the Pels are going to be able to out-compete just about every team they play, and I'm hoping it approaches Memphis Grizzly levels, right, that we've seen the last year or two. So Trey kind of showed it, but it was even better that he calmed down, right? He, like, let the offense come to him. He wasn't trying to create. I mean, how bad was he? He was just trying to bring the ball up the court at one point, right, during the game, cross half-court lines, just was determined to keep dribbling with the right hand, keep going in straight lines, just bulldozed whoever it was on the other team for a charge. Yeah, Trey still got a ways to go with the ball hang, but everything else I saw was positive. And that 1-for-9 three-point shooting performance, that's an anomaly. That's not going to keep happening. Trust us, guys. And I'm sure the Pels fans that really watch this team know that.
Yeah, he had really one awful game in summer league shooting from three last year. And everybody's like, well, what happened to his shooting that night? It happens. And I think you're right. And Fish, I'll let you go.
Yeah, right. I mean, think about it. He had an air ball. I just remember he had an air ball, right? When did Trey shoot air balls? It was a wide open three air ball. Yeah, something was up with him last night. Right?
Fish, wouldn't you think that in year two, I mean, again, he's the guy coming back and he looks at it and he's like, in the front court, who's supposed to score but me? You know, you look around that group and you say, I'm supposed to score here. And I think, and also the lack of having someone who can set you up. You know, this isn't, it wasn't the same group. It wasn't getting those, the transition plays and things that they got. And he had the chances he had to handle the ball. He was much more decisive, I felt, last year. Like it was, he wasn't doing six dribbles. He was doing two, three hard dribbles and going. And he didn't do that last night. But I think there was some pressure. But overall, Fish, you can go off of this. I think, again, Trey is showing. He rebounded. He got to the free throw line. He got turnovers. He created turnovers. And I think, you know, you're going to miss shots some nights. But, you know, like you pointed out, 7 of 8 inside the line.
Well, I mean, a couple things on that. One, he's coming back summer league after being a mainstay in the rotation in the playoffs. And he's in summer league. He shouldn't just go out there, especially when the Pelicans didn't have a point guard. But even early on, like he shouldn't go out there and just play the same role that he does for the Pelicans, like extend himself. That's the philosophy of most of the big, you know, franchises that have, you know, a well-developed development plan for their players, is that they're going to send them to the summer league that second year, and they're going to ask them to do stuff that they will hardly ever be asked to do, you know, in the role as it's drawn up for them coming into this season. So yeah, I mean, failure is going to be part of that always. I mean, he's doing more stuff, you know, off the dribble and stuff like that than he's ever done. Like there's no clips of him trying to do that kind of stuff when he was at Virginia, when he was at Rice. Like he hasn't had that kind of freedom, but the Pelicans are giving him that freedom to do that because, I mean, he needs to, you know, develop his bag of, you know, what are my go-tos and how am I going to create shots? The thing that jumped out to me about Trey was the fact that even though a lot of that self-creation and his shot behind the arc wasn't going, you still got the full Trey Murphy experience all the other places. You got tons of deflections. He had 4 steals. He probably had like 8 or 10 deflections. His arms are everywhere. Offensive rebounds, a handful of really impressive, just ridiculous dunks from somebody that's as tall as he is. You still got all of that. Like, he is not just a shooter. That's the thing, Grubb, you and I always say. Like, and the Pelicans aren't putting him into that tiny little box. Hey, just go out there, stand in the corner, and knock down shots when the ball comes to you. So I'm encouraged that the Pelicans are giving him this latitude to try to do more. I'm not surprised that it hasn't gone well yet. That's not to say that I wouldn't, you know, be ecstatic if it was going well, but I expect that tomorrow he's probably going to go out and he's going to try to do some of the same stuff. Like the Pelicans are going to give him the ball and ask him to create his own shot. And maybe he needs to do a little less in terms of, you know, the settling for pull-up threes, or, you know, maybe he has a much better shooting night and he's just raining fire on teams back there, because that's what he can do. And at 6 foot, what, 10, 10 and a half, however tall he is at this point, he can shoot over anybody that, you know, any summer league team is going to try to guard him with. He can, or any NBA team once he gets up, you know, when the Pelicans are playing in the regular season. So just keep doing it. And then all the rest of it is still there. And if anything, it's just getting better.
Charlie, would you tell me what you think of this comparison? It's like reverse engineering Brandon Ingram in a way with Trey Murphy, because Ingram came in, couldn't shoot the three. Ingram came in, you know, with high defensive expectations, but struggled to get up to those. And was much more, you know, trying to find his way his first couple years offensively in the NBA, and then it kind of clicked. With Trey, he comes in with the outside shot ready made. He's already a very solid defender and rebounder, but the thing that he has to work on are the non-athletic plays that they get like Fish just went through. But it seems that there's a similar type arc that could be with both their games. Charlie?
Oh. Now Charlie's chomping at the bit to answer this too, I bet.
No, I am. I am very excited to answer that because I think that's a brilliant deconstruction of this. Because, I mean, not only – you can look at it individually as, like, the person as well. Ingram was a high-caliber recruit, cousin to Duke, top pick, you know, somebody that was had high expectations, whereas Murphy was, you know, low-level recruit, late bloomer, Rice transfer to Virginia. Like, there's a lot of interesting parallels in that respect if you're really looking at what they could see Murphy becoming. And I think we could all agree that we've seen flashes where, like, he'll make some moves and he'll do some stuff that you're like, maybe there is some real untapped creation potential there. Mm-hmm. I've seen some people mentioning online about certain things, like about, you know, potentially like Rashard Lewis as a comp for him. Mm-mm. And I don't necessarily think that they're like, I don't think he's got the athleticism. I don't know. It feels a little clunky in some respects. But I see where their heads are at, like as far as like spot up shooter can kind of space the floor for the freak athlete. But I do think there's some real possibility, like as far as him growing into something that can be more of a creator, more of a threat, more of an offensive focal point to a degree. The shot's insane. Like, I just love his jump shot. I think it's just effortless and smooth. And, like, he just needs to continue to keep developing. And I think he's got, like, this weird athleticism. Like, he's not going to go be doing between the legs reverse, you know, things like we've seen Zion do recently. But he's got, like, this powerful, you know, leaping ability and stuff. And if he can keep getting, you know, keep doing this Godzilla growth chart that he's got going on, maybe he's the
he doesn't need to do anymore if you ask me.
I mean, he's huge. I mean, he even had to cut his hair because he was getting too damn tall. So like I was just kind of taken aback at how big he felt on the court yesterday at times, and like especially with that big dunk he got, or he got a few of them I guess, but like there was one where I was just like, god dang, he just looks huge. And the way he's able to just move and dominate and everything like that, if they're going to be able to kind of keep pushing him and giving him that kind of freedom and leeway to kind of maybe not run second units this year, but at least be the primary offensive option on those second units and really trying to get him to kind of unleash any extra creativity that he's got with the ball, that would be excellent. for this team's health long term, as far as just being able to just add another serious threat. Because, I mean, we've got a time, what 2 or 3 years left on CJ and JV if this team were to stay together theoretically. Right. Like, so, you know, they've got a little bit of time for him to grow into that, but he can be. Like, I have no doubt that I think he could be, like, the pseudo successor to like their offensive firepower.
Yeah, I think he needs to improve on. I was just going to say real quick, jump off what mm-hmm. Charlie said was, we both saw, right? The ball handling, without a doubt, he's got to improve to where he feels comfortable doing change of direction, you name it, reacting to the defense. Second thing, footwork. I think we saw it on that travel call, but especially you guys remember he had a drive down the middle of the lane, end up in the middle lane, but he went off the wrong foot to try to shoot it right-handed, going to his left on the left side of the rim, right? So it's just, if he could get the footwork and the dribbling, I think that would open up the world, because I think he thinks the game at a very high level. Mm-hmm. It's the execution part, right?
Yeah, we've seen that he could contribute when he's not scoring. We saw that, you know, all through the mm-hmm, playoffs exactly. and during the regular season.
He's made some good passes too, you know, we've caught in the past, right?
Yeah, he knows what he's supposed to do. And I think the biggest thing for him,
yep, the cuts, everything, yeah.
He's still adjusting to his body. Like, I think that is still a huge thing. When you're growing, that is a constant part of adjustment, because your angles are constantly changing. Your feel mm-hmm, is changing. your footwork has to change because your body is changing. But I think that you look at him, and if he's a guy who can play the three and the four legitimately at 6'10", and I think that the thing that separates him from a guy, like, I don't like the Rashard Lewis comparisons because I don't think Rashard Lewis was ever the kind of rebounder that we see that Trey can be. Like, Trey on the offensive glass is nasty.
Defender either, right? I mean,
defender. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Trey is a legit, you know, another guy who could be a top tier. I don't know if he's an all NBA, but he's a top. He could be a top tier defender for you. Mm-hmm. And his ability to create extra positions for you is something that Lewis didn't have either. I love Trey's game. But then when you look at that in comparison to Najee, I think a 2-for-12 out of Najee is far more concerning to me because he ain't supposed to ever be in a position where he misses 10 of his 12 shots. They shouldn't be coming in areas where that the percentages are that low. Fish?
Fish, you want to go?
I mean, that's the Najee experience. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not, man. I think he settled too many times for, like, to make three-point shots, just keep on going to the basket. I love Najee.
Those in the first quarter.
I love Najee, but Najee has those bad Tyreek games essentially, and that was one of them. He kind of is what he is at this point. I don't think he's regressing. I just think there's not a whole lot of progressing either. And he just is what it is. And you hope, I mean, if he can give you what he actually gave the Pelicans last year, and then he can shoot a little bit better behind the arc and it can be more like, you know, the 1920, I mean the 2021 version of Najee instead of the 21-22 just behind the arc, but just do all the rest of it, he'll be fine. But I'm, especially with somebody like Najee, where I've seen him play NBA minutes, mm-hmm. I'm not taking much of anything from summer league.
No, it's just you don't want to see him. Like I said, his shot selection is what it is. To me, and we're talking about a guy on the Pelicans roster that is essentially the 10th or 11th player. You know, so if Najee's your 10th or 11th, then you're still okay. I mean, like realistically, what you're expecting out of the Pelicans is Najee is, again, a guy who gets maybe 8 minutes a game. Maybe, and there will be nights he gets a lot of D&Bs.
No, you guys were doing player comps on Trey Murphy, and mm-hmm. I've got one. You guys are all old enough. But the thing that jumps out to me on him, I think more Detlef Schrempf. I know that's old, and it's strange, but. I see a lot of Detlef Schrempf in his game in a good way.
A little more athleticism, but yeah, I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
He's powerful.
Detlef
wasn't
that defender for me.
No, I think he's talking about offensive set wise and things like that.
Schrempf attacked the glass. Like he can do the rebound.
He was a legit 7-8 rebounder, game guy.
Yeah, and I mean he was a tremendous pure shooter.
Who could post up.
Yep,
he could post up and he could pass. Out of the post,
he had a couple of moves where he could get to the rim with the dribble. Right, that's what Trey can learn. Yeah, I can see it, Fish.
And Detlef was 6'10", right?
Yep.
Yeah. Remember, Detlef is the guy who inspired, of course, Dirk. You know, the Schrempf begat Dirk. So you know, he's the original long, tall German who had the outside shot.
Hey, real quick before we jump off of Najee, I just really quickly want to say, I was wondering about this after the game because, Najee, bad shooting performance. But if you remember last summer league, what did he do? He ended up getting to a lot of the spots where he's better from. Like, for instance, I remember mid-range, especially in that first summer league game last mm-hmm. year. He must have pulled up and hit at least, 4 or 5 of them. Didn't see that at all yesterday. So I'm wondering if the coaching staff is kind of pressuring him, you got to shoot the three, especially if you're open. Right, because we didn't see Najee start to get comfortable, I think, until the start of the second quarter where he made a cut, I believe, baseline, and scored at the rim, got to the free throw line. But before that, he was just awful. Missed 3 wide open threes in that first quarter, and he even missed a putback, right? He grabbed an offensive rebound and just missed it. And he just wasn't into it at all offensively. So I was just wondering if there's something more to it. Like, for instance, Fish, what gave me the idea is you talking about maybe the Pelicans coaching staff is like, this is your time to develop as much as you want. Work on the things, no matter how bad it looks, it doesn't matter. So I'm wondering if the same applied to Najee yesterday, right? So shoot the three, because if you're that's going to be your ticket on getting maybe more minutes, right? So if Najee shows it, then boom, he gets in. If not, he's got to keep working at it. So that's why I'm not hard on Najee either. I know he did.
The 0 for 4 for 3 isn't that bad, but it's 2 for 8 inside the line, 3-point arc. You know what I'm saying?
Like he missed a couple of bunnies. Yeah, he normally makes. Yeah, that's
the thing.
That's
why
Fish is right. It happens.
You're not counting on him to make 3 threes in a night. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he does, that's...
Those assists were big. There was no playmaking outside of Najee once Daniels left. None. I mean...
No, none.
Well, I mean, that's... That, to me, the fact that there was no playmaking helps explain. I mean, because Portland does have, you know, the summer league roster they rolled out has a lot of long, athletic big men who jump
they met
and
the
change
Pels at the
rim
a few times.
Rim.
Yeah, it's surprising.
So,
Trendon Watford. Trendon Watford was, I mean, he is so much better than he was at LSU already. I don't know why this happens with LSU big men, but we saw it with Naz Reid, and now we're seeing it with Trendon Watford, but they get much better when they get away from LSU.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing with Tari Eason now we're going to see.
Yeah. So, but I mean, we saw last year Herb Jones in summer league couldn't make a layup. And I don't ever remember thinking, you know, during the games that actually mattered in the regular season that, oh, you know, Herb's finishing at the rim is a big problem. So I don't take a whole lot away from that kind of stuff. And again, like, as soon as Jose's not playing and then Dyson rolls his ankle and you don't have point guards on the floor and you just have a whole bunch of guys who are trying to do some stuff, and they don't have somebody out there that's giving them, you know, the easy, you know, back cuts and, you know, layups and things like that and feeding guys off of a pick and roll. Like, once you take all of, you know, you take all the good stuff, the easy stuff off the plate, and everybody just has to, the only thing that's happening on the floor is everybody's trying to get theirs. That's just not a situation where you're going to have a lot of success. And it is a situation where I think that I would not be surprised if we saw Jose tomorrow night, just for the Pelicans looking around and being like, you know what we need is we need some competence out there, because it's going to make things easier for those guys to do the things that we want them to do and to not, you know, latch onto like some bad habits.
Yeah, EJ Liddell was a ghost mainly because there was no point guard out there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
like
he can't. Go ahead, Fish.
And if you're not going to put him in the post, right, and throw the ball into him, then how's he going to score, right?
Or if he's not going to come off, if you're not going to run him in pick and roll sets, if you're not going to, you know, do things that get him active,
there was no movement.
No, if he's just stationary at his size, it makes him smaller. If he's stationary, it just makes him smaller. And so, you know, the big thing about him, the overcoming of his size, was that he moved so well, and he just didn't get that opportunity. There was no motion in the Pelicans' offense. No.
Yeah, Greb, keep talking about EJ Liddell. Let's touch on him, guys, because I'm sure fans are wondering, what the heck, man? This guy was supposed to be a heck of a catch landing in the second round, and he, scores one bucket and basically did nothing else. So, Greb, go ahead.
Yeah,
go into more depth, and we'll go around.
I mean, this is not the setup that works for him. You know, like, when you don't have ball movement, you are putting him in positions where – what is he supposed to do offensively? There is no screen for him to set. There's no pop, you know, for him to go to. And then there was nothing for him really. The way the shot selection was, they were shooting so poorly from three. He's not going to get those offensive rebounds in those cases. He was just putting, I think, in bad situations. It wasn't about him. It's his first game. So, I mean, again, what do you expect as far as the high end? But as far as what he was doing on the floor, I don't think he was doing anything wrong. I just think he was just not put in situations that were advantageous to him. And I think that we'll see. You see what happens against Atlanta. You see, he'll get more opportunities than everybody else in this group, because I don't think Trey is going to play a whole bunch of minutes the rest of the way. I think he'll get his opportunities, but they're not trying to wear him out in the summer league. They just want to see how he's grown. But with a guy like EJ that you are thinking about investing real draft, real draft capital in and money in, then you're going to give him better opportunities. And I think that's the thing to go do and film before they get to Atlanta and say, how do we make it easier for EJ to get some confidence? And there was just nothing for him in game one.
Fish or Charlie?
I didn't take a whole lot from it. I mean, the thing is that, especially when you're talking about somebody like EJ Liddell, the last time he was playing competitive basketball at Ohio State, the ball went through him all the time. Like Malachi Branham scored off of EJ Liddell. He is coming into a completely different situation, and then there's no point guard. Like, Saturday, like, I forgot about the tape. Like, it's like the HBO show Westworld now, where he's like, he looks at something, he's like, I don't even know what this is. So, yeah, I'm just throwing that out.
You know who I saw out there? You know what's scary to me? I thought I saw Dante Cunningham, right? Go stand in the corner, right? And that's what it seemed like they relegated him to on half of the offensive possession.
I don't think that's what they wanted to do.
What was his first shot attempt? Wasn't it an out-of-bounds three that he airballed? Was that it, guys? You remember that? He caught it. He was wide open, shot an airball from a stationary position. He wasn't that guy at Ohio State. I completely agree with Fish.
Yeah, I think you're trying to get a shot up. You want to get some touch. You know what I'm saying? Like, how does the ball feel? I haven't shot the ball. And I think that there's always – I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's summer league or whatever. You come in there, not a lot of guys can just walk in that first game and be like, not feel the pressure. You know, not feel the eyeballs. It's different. It's different. And I'm not, again, it's game one, and they had no idea. The guys on the floor have no familiarity with him or his game, and you have no real point guard out there. I'm not mad at him. I'm not mad at EJ Liddell at all. You know what I mean? Like, let's see, you know, give him a couple. I think he's going to get 20 plus minutes the rest of the way. He didn't get that in game one. You know, it depends on his contract status, I think, too. But I think they want to play him more as they go forward. But it's just, who are you going to play him with if they don't have any guards?
Charlie, you got anything to add that we haven't mentioned on Liddell?
No, not really on Liddell. Again, you guys have all touched on it. I mean, like, we're going to have more to see from him. And that was kind of just like a ghost experience. First game, a lot of stuff happening, a few things going wrong, Dyson getting hurt. Yeah, it's just kind of a wash. I'm curious to see if they try and put the ball in his hands more, especially if they pull Trey, which I don't know if they will or not. When Dyson went down, I'm like, okay, so they're going to pull Trey and Najee next game is my guess, just because, you know, I don't know, you want to hedge on not getting injured. So part of me would be really curious to see if you just kind of handed it over to run the team through Liddell like that offensively, maybe just see what he can do. I'm curious because, you know, our other second rounder was interesting, to say the least.
Well, I mean, I think when we talk about Maković, look, they said he was 2 years away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's not ready. And the biggest thing for any big that you're asking for to come into the NBA immediately is, physically, are you ready? And can you play defense? And he's not ready to play NBA level defense, and he's not physically ready.
He doesn't even understand it. Yeah. No. I saw Najee trying to explain one of his illegal D's to him during a free throw.
I'm not convinced that that was the same person that we even saw on scouting tape at this point.
But, Europe is so different. There's zone. Yeah. There's all these.
True, Charlie. Yeah, that's true.
It's just a completely different game. And I think, you know, he has no experience playing in NBA type environment. So if he sees any time this year again, that's because there's something dire happening. I think they're sending him back overseas, but this is an opportunity for him to learn.
You're not going to see him yet. He's not even going to be on an NBA contract. They're just going to have his draft rights. There's no way he's playing. No.
So the only other guys that you look at this group and you say, realistically, who are you evaluating? Is you look at Jared Harper, and like we've already talked about with him, I don't think we need to rehash it. He's a chucker, and he chucked shots.
Well, you need scores. But I'll tell you what, he couldn't play make at all. And my biggest thing was defensively. I rewatched some of it. He is so bad defensively, guys. He can't play NBA minutes just because he can't defend, right? Portland got going in that second quarter because, one, Pelicans were turning it over like crazy, but two, they were taking advantage of Harper, just shooting over him Or when he was rotating, guess what? He was like a moth basically out there. They were just going over around him, whatever. I mean, there was breakdowns galore.
Who does that remind you of?
Take your pick of any small guard, man.
The Pelicans? Anybody? Guy likes to shoot a bunch. Defense picks him out as soon as he gets on the court, undersized. I don't know.
Nate Robinson, you're trying to say?
No, I'm trying to talk about Devontae Graham.
Okay. Duh.
I've blocked him out already.
I'll tell you what, Devontae does so much more defensively than what I saw of Jared yesterday. Just to be honest.
But that's you're calling it a low bar then, man. Because remember,
it is. I know it is, but I'm telling you, that's how I was offended by what Jared was doing defensively.
The guy that I wanted to see that we didn't see a lot of that is intriguing as kind of a two-way long-term project is John Butler out of Florida State. God, I mean, of all the people that the Pelicans have ever had that needs to eat a sandwich, he needs to eat one like every 15 minutes.
Every hour on the hour.
Yeah. So
he should be eating on the bench.
Yes. But that's the one guy that I was hoping to see because he seems like the kind of guy that the Pelicans end up getting on that second two-way. And he just spends all of his time in Birmingham. And it's like kind of like the super long play. Because I believe he was pretty highly recruited and ranked coming out of high school.
He was
7'1". They list him at 174 pounds.
It looked
like I haven't been 174 pounds.
I've never seen a thinner. Have you guys ever seen a thinner NBA player? I haven't.
I haven't seen a thinner NBA player, but I'm pretty sure the
thin, right? Grubb, you remember this.
I played
Grubb, where, Fish. When's the last time y'all were 174 pounds? I'll take
this. I was in the 10th grade, I think, when last time I was 174 pounds. I was in the 10th grade.
But
I graduated
the thing
high school
is, it's funny because I'm pretty sure the last time I played against a 7-footer in high school. I was playing up against a guy who was like 7 foot, like 180 pounds, and I moved this guy around all over the court, man.
I guess the only guy I could compare it playing it growing up in New Orleans was I played against Dwayne Spencer, and Dwayne was about 7 feet and maybe weighed 180 pounds when he went to college. But Dwayne looked bigger than that. Like,
yeah,
Collins
was thin. I mean,
he's hard
crazy
to see
thin
on the screen.
He's skinny.
He looks like there's CGI going on. I swear to God, he looks like a Magic Man out
he's
there.
He's a creative player, and somebody was like, because 2K punishes you for putting pounds on. You can't jump as high. The more weight you put on your player, even if it's like 220, like all of a sudden you can't jump, and you're like, what the hell? Yeah, I think he's like somebody was like, let me just bring the weight down to 174, and I'll be able to fly. Yeah. But he's stretched out. I mean – he's going to have to get strength, obviously. Like, it's just eat and get in the weight room all day.
Yeah, there was this one rebound, defensive rebound. He was going to go up for it, and he got pushed so easily underneath the rim. I'm like, man, this guy's – like, we made fun of Jackson Hayes, right? It was 100 times worse.
Like, that's the one guy that I'm interested in is, like, just, like, a super long-term – like
oh, for when, sure. Yeah.
Like, this is an absolute, like – we're either going to, like, get a hit and it's awesome, or this you will never hear about this guy in 36 months.
You want to find out, the one thing that you're going to have to find out from him is, does he have that natural timing to block shots?
Yep.
That's the one thing you're looking for is, can he affect the game in short amounts of time by protecting the rim?
Mm-hmm.
And if in 2 years, because that's what you're looking at. Like you said, this is a down the road projection because he wasn't a pick. He's a guy you brought in. He should be in Birmingham. If he goes to Birmingham and he's blocking 4 and 5 shots a night, then you say, okay, we got something you can build with. Because at the very least, that's the one skill that you know you don't
have.
Damn,
Grubb, you're setting the bar high.
I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Shot blockers show that they're shot blockers. I've always said that. People who are shot blockers, it's very quick that you realize who is and who is not. And that's why I've always said that Jackson Hayes can't be, and I hate using him over and over again, but he's the only guy on the roster that you would say is supposed to be blocking shots. I never saw it. I never saw that natural ability. And people are like, well, you can learn it. No, you can't. Herb showed you. Herb showed you that the timing of a shot blocker, no matter what the position, is something you either have or you don't. You know what I'm saying? So that's what you, that's the only thing that really the first thing you're looking for out of him is, man, can you block shots? Because if you can, you bring something to this table that we don't have.
It looks like he's got good mobility. I mean, the few minutes that
he better have good mobility. Yeah. You can push him with the.
There's been like tall guys that are skinny. They just don't move, right? They still look like they got concrete speed. But this guy looked like he's got speed. It's just like I didn't see anything else other than the lack of strength. Hopefully, we see him play at least 10-12 minutes next game.
I think he probably will, because so as some of the guys who actually are on the roster start pulling back their minutes, and you start giving these guys more minutes because they're not trying to. It's a different thing than last year. It's just a completely different mode than last year, where you were counting on guys to come out of summer league and trying to that you needed to take up minutes. Now you got too many players and not enough minutes. It's a completely different situation. So I think he'll get an opportunity. It's just maybe against Atlanta. That's the next game tomorrow night. Well, I guess when this airs, Monday night, they play the Hawks, who lost their first game of the summer league as well. So I don't know who's going to play for the Hawks. The lineups aren't set. Guys, if there's one thing you're looking for, Charlie, we'll start with you. What's the one thing you want to see in game two of Summer League?
Oh, well, since Dyson's almost certainly out, I want to see EJ. I really do. I'd love to see more. Get this guy involved. Let him cook. Like, let's see what he can do against other NBA talent or potential NBA talent, as we should say, and see what he's got and if he can take control and just kind of assert himself. We've seen him do it. We know he did it at Ohio State. We know he's got, you know, at least he's got it there. I just want to see him in a Pels uniform doing it in summer league. That's what I'm most interested in seeing. And besides that, it's just whether or not they keep Trey and Najee out there anymore, and if they hedge at all in bringing Jose into this team, which I would doubt.
Fish?
I mean, if Jose and Dyson don't play, I hope that I see more. I hope that I see more John Butler, just so we can kind of get something to evaluate with. And then I'm with Charlie in terms of EJ. The other guys that are, you know, Najee and Trey, their performance in Las Vegas is not going to sway me negatively. Maybe if they're just like incredible and Trey comes out and like drops 40 or something, then it can be just like, yep, shut him down. He's way too good for this.
Ollie?
Yeah, since you guys have touched on everybody else, I'm going to say one name we haven't even talked about tonight, Darion Sebron. I was hoping to see something out of him on Saturday, and I didn't see anything, right? He got his limits, first of all, were very limited, and he looked a little timid, didn't do anything that I kind of thought we would expect, right? I have a combo guard that's very athletic and loves to take it to the rim, didn't see any of that. Saw a guy that was just kind of going through the motions out there in terms of not trying to, I don't know, be aggressive on a single play, which I didn't quite understand considering that's who he is. Because when we talked to him after practice, like last week, he had compared himself, like the first name he mentioned, to Jonte Murray, right? He mentioned guys like that of his ilk where, you know, he's fast, quick as lightning, likes to rebound, likes to get to the rim, and can do all those things at his size. And like I said, I didn't see any of that. So I'm hoping we see that because the Pels have already committed a two-way contract to him. And usually, you know, hey, Jose Alvarado, they've done pretty well in identifying that type of undrafted talent. So I hope to see at least something out of him against the Hawks.
For me, the one thing that I'm looking for is some cohesion, that guys realize that the biggest thing that the Pelicans are looking for is how do you play the game of basketball, not how many points you got. And I think that a lot of these guys would be better served by understanding play this game as a team. You know, whether you win or lose, I don't care. The W's and L's don't matter in the summer. I don't care if the NBA is giving out a ring. That shit don't matter to me. It's how do they play? And I think that was the thing last year that meant so much. It was the reason you were so excited And again, it wasn't the scores were the byproduct of how they played. You know, they played as a group. Even though these guys didn't know each other last year, they played as a group. And I want to see more of that. Can they come together and at least play cohesively on offense and defense and try to, you know, come out from the beginning with energy? They didn't look like they had a bunch of energy as a group in game one. So hopefully there's more energy and just esprit de corps in game two against the Hawks. All right, guys, I think we've hit it. Unless there's any final words that anybody wants to get in. Any final words, gentlemen?
Yeah, we covered everything I thought that we needed to, right? Zion in the first game, and yeah, all our thoughts on it.
So, you know, Pelicans fans, again, this is not real basketball. This is an opportunity to see some things, to learn some things, but it's not real.
Nobody's screaming fire Jaren Collins, fire Willie Green, fire David Griffin. What the hell?
This guy's not. Why did you draft it? No, slow down. It's gonna be okay. This is not even like this is not your team. this is not your team.
Yeah.
These are not the New Orleans Pelicans. This is the New Orleans Pelicans Summer League representatives. So let's just remember that and enjoy the fact that we get five games of basketball here in July while we wait for the preseason and the regular season to come in September and October. Until the next time, I'm David Grubb for David Fisher, Charlie Gonzalez, and Ali Cosell. This has been the Bird Calls, and in the words of our friend Preston Ellis, let's go Pelicans.
For listening to the Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.